Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Scientology Fair Game. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Leah.
Well, we're very excited. Mike, do you want to introduce Richard, who has a very lengthy and impressive resume?
Yes, I do. Richard, it is wonderful to have you with us. And I just want to let everybody know a little bit about who you are. You have been a contributing editor of investigations for Forbes magazine since 2012. You've written for Time magazine, for Fortune, for Forbes. You are famous.
You have the right guy?
I do.
We have the right guy.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Richard has received many prestigious awards, the Gerald Loeb Award, Conscience in Media Award, Worth Bingham Prize, George Polk Award, Overseas Press Club Award, the Jack Anderson Award twice, and on August 5th, penned an article in Forbes magazine about Representative Karen Bass and her statements about Scientology. We're going to address that a little bit later because I want to go into a bit more of the background about Rich. And he is the author of perhaps the most comprehensive and far-reaching article in the history of Scientology, which was published in Time magazine in May of 1991. Cover story entitled "The Thriving Cult of Greed and Power, Ruined Lives, Lost Fortunes, Federal Crimes, Scientology Poses as a Religion, but Really is a Ruthless Global Scam, and Aiming for the Mainstream." That's quite a title, Rich.
Yeah, and not to mention, guys, the importance of Time magazine at the time was astronomical, being that there was no internet. So it was the most influential magazine at the time, and Scientologists like me, of course, were forbidden from even looking at it. And you, Mike.
Well, no, I looked at it, Leah.
Yes, you're right.
That's
so
exactly
I should clarify,
right.
Mike was the head, at the time, Mike was the head of Scientology's department of, I don't know, how do you describe yourselves? The hitmen of Scientology?
I'm going to get a picture of you guys.
Yes, please.
Confessing everything.
Okay, yes.
There you go.
You were part of the Department of Scientology that goes after people telling the truth about Scientology. So, of course, you would have been told you needed to read it, and then I'm sure the fair gaming began. But anyway, go ahead, Mikey. You want to add anything?
Well, I just wanted to add something, Rich, that you may not understand from your perspective at the time. The reason that Time magazine and that article was so, so important was David Miscavige believed that it would be the biggest threat to gaining tax-exempt status for Scientology.
Because it's true.
And he was right.
Right.
Time had enormous influence, and the fact of the matter is that the IRS responds to pressure from the media and pressure from Congress and elected officials. And Miscavige was in the battle of his life at that time because L. Ron Hubbard had decreed in his estate planning that the distribution of his wealth and assets could only go to a tax-exempt organization. An IRS-recognized tax-exempt organization. And we've talked about this at some length at other places, and we'll no doubt talk about it more. But Rich, understand, at that moment in time, it was the single most important thing that Miscavige believed that he had to accomplish, which was gaining tax-exempt status for Scientology. And your article threw a massive wrench in the works of that. And that is why you saw the reaction that you saw, which is unprecedented in the history of Scientology. There has never been a response or reaction like that. Now, we've talked a lot. I know that you had earlier done an article in Fortune magazine about Hubbard and Scientology and the tax status of Scientology.
In 1986, right?
Yeah.
It was called The Profit and Profits of Scientology.
But at that time, the urgency of gaining tax-exempt status wasn't what it was in 1991. So you saw a very different reaction to the Time magazine article than you did to the earlier article that you had written. But let me ask you, why did you embark on that 1991 article to begin with?
Is our time up? It was very nice.
Thank you, Richard, for joining us. It was a pleasure.
It started with the 1986 Forbes piece, because I was on the Forbes 400 as a reporter. The Forbes 400 had began a few years before. And one of the files I was given by an editor was Hubbard, just to look into it, to see if he belonged on the Forbes 400 richest Americans list. Wow. And the more I looked into the file, and the more I started reading articles about him and the group, I just became so fascinated with it and started doing interviews and just thought, there's an article here. So that article basically came from that.
And then, Richard, at the time when you were doing your preliminary look into L. Ron Hubbard, did you come across anything on fair game? Were you alerted to the fact that if you dug deep, well, you don't really need to dig that deep in Scientology. Did you see things on fair game? Did you?
I was aware of fair game. I think we mentioned it in the piece. From what I remember, the church wouldn't talk to me. Nobody would talk to me. But then right before publication, like a boxes or cartons of documents just showed up. We thought, oh, this has to be a way of just delaying the piece.
Right.
So the lawyer said, just go through it, see what's there, pull stuff, you know.
And what was it?
And one of the photocopies of basically useless stuff. But a few of the things I picked up were, I still have the letter, actually, that our attorney sent back to Scientology. It's a pretty good letter, but I think basically said, you know, just two of the things we picked up at random were false.
Right
out of this box.
Right.
So, you know, that's it. You know, so there was a private eye.
Yeah.
Or two who started phoning around to the staff. And I can't remember posing as what, or I can't remember.
Do you remember the questions that they were being asked?
No,
or
not at that time.
Okay. So
threatened to sue, but didn't. So there wasn't really a fair game against me in any, you know, meaningful way.
Until when?
Well, when I went to Time magazine, of course, I took my files with me. And, you know, the thing about Scientology, when you do a major piece, it doesn't go away. You know, people reach out to you. People contact you.
Right.
Yeah. It's actually, you know, like gum stuck in the bottom of your shoe. You can't get it off.
Right.
And by 1991, I gathered so much string on it. The file was growing, and I thought, you know, this is a bigger piece. This needs to be in Time.
Right.
And the LA Times did a great series the year before, 90.
Yeah.
And we did it. And did not expect the kind of reaction we got. I didn't realize it was primarily due to the tax status, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It hit an artery. It flew off the newsstand.
Yeah.
One of the best-selling issues we received, and I still have them, I think.
Yeah.
More than 1,000 letters, written letters.
Yeah.
And I think that set a record, if I remember correctly.
Letters of support from people who were
angry letters or supporters or former members.
Yeah.
But I think it ran about 10-1 against the church, the letters, if my memory's right.
Right.
The ad campaign and then the litigation and then the private eyes were relentless.
Well, let's talk about that. So in 1991, Time magazine comes out, like you guys said, the thriving cult of greed and power. And then David Miscavige starts to go insane with the response and the truth getting out there. Yeah. So let's go over some of the things that occurred from this. So the fair gaming begins pretty full on, right, Mike? This is the time when you guys are really
It began before publication.
Of course. Sure. I'm sure you got many, many legal threats.
In fact, I was getting annoyed at Time because piece was sitting there, and the private eyes were tailing me, and it was relentless, and the piece was just sitting there for weeks because they wanted to make it a cover, but they had other stuff happening. And my recollection is Kitty Kelly and the Kurds. These were the biggest stories that kept getting, and I actually wrote to an editor saying, hey, you know, what's going on here?
Right.
I mean, you know, I'm dealing with this.
Right.
Let's get the piece in already. So then it got in. But
and no, had you been followed, yeah. Richard? I mean, because you have a pretty extensive career. I mean, you've covered lots of subjects that would cause you, as a reporter and journalist, concern. Were you shocked by the PIs following? I mean, had this ever happened to you prior to Scientology, doing a piece on Scientology?
Well, let me just think. Off the top of my head, I'm remembering I did a piece on organized crime, a big one for Time magazine. And it was before the Scientology piece. And it said something about the Genovese family being, you know, the best and most important family. And one of the families, I said, you know, brains like ashtrays or what people say about them. Mm-hmm. And I came back to my apartment building and the lobby, my mailbox was painted black.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my sources, who was an FBI informant in organized crime, told me that it was done in retaliation by a low-level mobster who got reamed out for it.
Right. Right. Well, there's the difference. I mean, I'd rather, would you, between the two, I'm sure you'd rather have the mafia after you than Scientology.
So I don't remember anything. Now, I don't know. Did I have private eyes before that doing so? I don't remember.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So after the Time magazine comes out, it's a huge hit. Then comes full page color ads in USA Today every day for 12 weeks. Right? In May and June of 1991. Yeah, oh, and it was ending with a 48-page...
I saved them. I have them all.
You do? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
So what happened there was, the day the article actually appeared and we first got a copy of it, Miscavige called me, Marty Rathbun, Warren McShane, and a few others into a conference room.
These are all Sea Org members, right, Mikey?
Yep. Senior officials of Religious Technology Center, which is his organization, and myself into a conference room in his building and said, okay, we're going to war. What are we going to do about this? And he came up with a number of things that had to be done. One was suing Time magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Number two was connecting Time magazine to what he believed was the underlying cause of this attack and assault, which was Scientology exposing Eli Lilly's drug Prozac, which is a crazy story that I will get to in a minute, Richard. And number three was, we are going to destroy the reputation of Time magazine, and then we are going to do what L. Ron Hubbard says, fill the vacuum about Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
And the destruction of the reputation of Time magazine was a series of full-page ads in USA Today, which went into historical facts about, you know, William Luce, the founder of Time magazine, Henry Luce and his experiments with LSD, and the fact that in 1932 or something, Time magazine had put Adolf Hitler on the cover as the man of the year, and Mussolini. And these ads were designed to create the impression that you couldn't trust anything that Time magazine said.
Right.
What happened was, David Miscavige, Marty Rathbun, and myself went to USA Today to get them to agree to run the ads. And this was no easy task.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up meeting with the publisher of USA Today, Tom Curley, in his office, who later went on to become the head of AP in New York, and persuaded him that whether he liked it or not, the information in the ads was factual, so they didn't have a basis for turning it down, and that they would be sued if they refused and discriminated against Scientology for refusing to run the ads.
Mm. So, and what do these ads cost, Mike? What do you remember what these ads cost? If you had to guess.
Like, you know, maybe $100,000 per.
It was a $3 million ad campaign. Yeah. What
so that's $50,000 per, because it was 12 weeks, 5 days a week. Full page color ads in USA Today. It was a very expensive proposition. And along with that, there was these publications. At the end of that run of ads, there was a 48-page booklet, you know, shouting about the virtues of Scientology that was inserted into all copies of USA Today in the United States. There was another booklet published called Fact Versus Fiction, which went through Rich's article and nitpicked every little thing and claimed that it was all false based on the fact that, you know, it was sort of a typical Scientology dead agent caper. Every source of information was an unreliable source of information. Mm-hmm. Every fact in there was somehow wrong. You know, the birth date of L. Ron Hubbard wasn't March 13th, 1912. It was March 13th, 1911. If you got that wrong, you must have got everything wrong.
I didn't get that wrong, did I?
No, you didn't. I'm just giving that as an example.
It was crazy that I have it. I have that, the story Time Wouldn't Tell. I have it. It's really something. I have the booklet, but the cover of it is like a 1950s style editor's room with two shadows behind the door and an editor scolding a reporter, you could see.
Right. Oh, that'd be great if we could get that.
I think I have it, and I think I have a picture of it. But if not, I'll reach out to you, Rich, and I'll get you to take a copy of it.
And
but
then, Mike, was that the Freedom Magazines? Were the Freedom Magazines doing those hit pieces on journalists? Is that the same thing, or was there something different then?
It was like its own publication. A publication of Freedom Magazine called The Story Time Couldn't Tell. And that was the description of the supposed conspiracy between Eli Lilly and Time Magazine.
I see.
And that Eli Lilly had coerced Time Magazine into publishing this article about Scientology by offering to buy 750,000 copies of the magazine up front on the basis that they'd do a hit piece in it. And this was to retaliate against the exposure of the dangers of Prozac, which was costing Eli Lilly sales of their mind-altering drug.
Right.
This was the entire conspiracy laid out in this booklet. And along with that was a lawsuit filed against Time Magazine for $416 million and a lawsuit filed against Eli Lilly and the parent company of Hill & Knowlton, the Washington PR firm. I mean, these conspiracies were enormously complicated and not very well founded, but were on the basis that Scientology at that time was operating on what Hubbard said: you file lawsuits not for the purpose of winning, but for the purpose of harassing.
So who believed all this stuff you just said? Did Miscavige believe it? Did you believe it, these conspiracy theories?
I think I did believe it. But, you know, I believed a lot of crazy shit back then, Rich. It comes with... you have a mindset of the world and how is the world and what's going on and why are people doing things and the media is all merchants of chaos and et cetera, et cetera. So even though it may have been thinly put together, there was enough that matched the world view that it was, this has got to be it.
And at the same time, Richard, I should add to what Mike is saying, it doesn't matter that you were telling the truth. It only matters that you were speaking. And that's what Scientologists and Scientology has a problem with. I knew what people were saying was true, and there were things I didn't know about, right? But it didn't matter. The brainwashing, that's the result of it. It's like, yeah, that's true, Leah, that you know, that happened, or that's true to this person, that you were raped by a Scientologist or molested by your Scientology father, but you shouldn't be saying it publicly against Scientology. So that is the problem, that you are speaking. Not necessarily that what you're saying is untrue. It's that Mike and people of OSA and Scientology in general just don't want you to speak about the truth.
But did Miscavige believe that crap, the conspiracy stuff, or no?
No.
Well, who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah. But it sort of doesn't matter. He believed it enough to invest a few $100 million in it. It's not his money, of course, but, you know, is that different than truly believing it? I don't know. And I know, and it's a sort of a distinction that I'm not sure has any real reason or value to make, even, you know.
You said several $100 million. That's a big number. I mean, that didn't go against us. It includes Lily and all the other battles.
Yes, and all of the media and all of the paying of ads and, you know, PIs. Hiring of PIs and paying lawyers. You know, the Time Magazine suit was one case that was litigated in New York, but then there were ancillary cases litigated in Los Angeles that went on forever. And there was the Lily case that went on. There was cases against, because Reader's Digest then republished a version of your article all over the world. And we sued Reader's Digest in like Holland and Switzerland and Italy and
maybe 20 countries is my recollection.
All over the place.
And how long did this lawsuit go on for, Mike?
Well, I was deposed. It went on. The lawsuit went on for a decade. I was deposed for like over 30 days. And I remember I had great lawyers. Great lawyers. And I remember saying to Floyd Abrams, Floyd was our main lawyer. He did Pentagon Papers. He's one of the, you know, probably the top First Amendment lawyer in the world.
Right.
And I said to Floyd, how is this possible that the church declined to even answer one of my questions? Mm-hmm. And I have to sit here for 30 days and answer all of theirs. And he said, you know, the problem is they have the money, they have the resources, and your article is so extensive and lengthy and your files are so vast that they actually are allowed to just spend a whole day on a paragraph if they want to.
And Mike, this was purposeful, right? This was
absolutely.
Can you give us some insight into the conversations that go on?
Absolutely. The big fear at that time was that this was going to begin an avalanche of media that was going to expose all sorts of things all over the place. And then it wouldn't just be the problem of Time Magazine and Reader's Digest. Mm-hmm. It would become the problem that now it was the Boston Globe. Now it's the Dallas Morning News. Now it's this. Now it's that. And
you succeeded.
Exactly.
Because I thought, wow, after this, the press isn't going to be afraid. The chilling effect is over. You're going to see all these articles. And no, actually, that didn't happen. Media outlets were chilled. And I saw it again and again. I saw media outlets calling me and saying, you know, hey, we're going to do a piece. Can you help us? And then the piece is killed.
Right.
The church threatens them. It doesn't air. Right. And I remember thinking, well, maybe I ought to do a book. So I got a book agent.
Yeah.
And the book agent shopped it around to the big houses.
Yeah.
And I said, look, here are the terms of mine. Number one, the book proposal is not going to be on paper.
Right.
Because they'll get it.
Right.
And they'll sue me and I'll be sued without backup of Time Magazine, et cetera.
Right.
Number two, I want a lot of money because this is going to be the rest of my life. So they'll go after me.
Yes.
And I forgot this. Oh, I want to be indemnified.
Right.
So she came back to me and she said, no book publishing house of the majors wants to touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Right.
Nobody wants, I mean, Larry did that. Larry did a great book. You guys, you know, everyone's done great books now. But back then, and I said, you know, it's so sad. I mean, why don't three or four of the top publishing houses band together and do a book, you know, do the book we had to band together to publish.
Right.
Wouldn't that have been a great idea from a marketing standpoint?
Yes, of course. And you know
he
what,
said,
Mike?
Not going to happen. Right, exactly. You guys, because you guys have already spent, I think it was $6 million defending the case at that point. And they don't know if they'll sell enough. I mean, it's just sort of a losing proposition.
And
for
Mike,
them.
That is the purpose of fair game, what you're saying, right? 10 years of litigation, millions and millions of dollars are being spent. Richard's being followed. He's being exhausted. He's breaking down. People are dropping like, you know, like flies. And this is the purpose, right, Mike? A fair game is to silence people. And like Richard said, it was successful.
It was.
Yes. Yeah. It was very successful. Yes. I mean, I still fight, Leah, as you know, with the media today saying, look, I know what I know how it looks to you, but that's not actual reality. Do you know that Scientology lost the case against Time Magazine?
That went on for 10 years.
No, that's the thing. Mike, you're right, because I remember when Floyd called me and said, it's over, you won. You know, when the Supreme Court, I guess, decided not to hear. And I said, really, Floyd, what did I win?
Right.
And he said, you won the right to be left alone.
Right. And did that happen?
That's a great answer.
It is a great answer. Absolutely right. If you've had to deal with what Richard's had to deal with, and as well, the most egregious is Paulette Cooper.
Oh, yeah, Paulette.
Yeah. And Paulette Cooper, who had to go through this for 10, 15 years as well. Also a also a journalist, not a Scientologist, never was.
Yeah.
No, I get it. But ultimately, the point is, and the message we want to send is that they ultimately, it was dismissed and Scientology lost.
Yes, but here's the thing. When you're sued for libel and it goes on like that, it affects your career because you become a half-time defendant.
Right.
So you can only be a half-time journalist.
Right.
I mean, for 10 years, that wasn't the case, but there were such long periods like that. And that's how you defeat a reporter in a sense. But, you know, I mean, I'm not defeated. I mean,
no.
I remember like 20 days into the deposition or something, and it was just, I was tired. Sometimes I had my head on the table.
Right.
And they're asking questions. And, you know, nasty, nasty, nasty stuff sometimes. And at a certain point, I just felt, come on. Is that the best you can do? I thought. Right. You know, the more you are awful, the more I realize I'm so glad I did that piece.
Right.
So keep coming. What else you got? And they were nasty. I mean, they cried into family. They. I remember some of the questions were just really awful. But by the way, before I do, I the tax exempt status. I remember the day that you guys got tax exempt status because the next day they came in. The lawyers came in for a deposition, and God, were they smiling? They were just. Mm. I mean, they just looked at me like. Look what we got.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway, I'll give you an example that stands out. They always try to throw you off base. Like, Mr. Behar, you said that you didn't read all of Dianetics. Mm-hmm. This is way into the depositions. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Did you read chapter whatever? Mm-hmm. I said, I don't know. I don't remember. Well, let us tell you that on that chapter, Mr. Hubbard talked about fetal development and whatever's going on in the world of a fetus affects that person. Mm-hmm. I start smiling because I know exactly where they're going.
Where?
And they said, Lubell or whoever said, Mr. Behar, when you were a fetus.
What?
You know, what was going, I'm paraphrasing. I'd have to look at the transcript.
No, this is bad enough. You don't.
Mr. Behar, when you were a fetus, what was going on in your world? And I just remember, I mean, I had to basically, I think I wanted to throw my sleeve down my throat to start right. from laughing.
Right.
And Floyd or Dean, my lawyers, one of them said, Mr. Behar will not be answering questions about his life as a fetus. And, you know, we'll go to the judge and see if the judge thinks that this is a, but their argument was, I was a ward of the state my whole childhood, actually. Oh. And the church knew this. The church right. dug into my family background in some very bad ways, or the private eyes, you know, however you want to say yeah. it, on behalf of the church. But they were trying to make the point that there was turmoil going on in my world when I was a fetus. Mm-hmm. And when I read Dianetics, that chapter I must have read, and it got me angry.
Mm, I see.
And decided Mike, to go after the church as a result. That was their theory.
Oh, I see. So you, okay.
They wanted to ask those questions.
And Mike, the purpose of this, as you're sitting around, all of you horrible, nasty people, you're thinking, okay, so we dig into his past, we find the most sensitive to just destroy him. You hope that he walks out of the room destroyed and depleted of any humanity. I mean, like any, I mean, what are these conversations?
Well, we've talked a few times, Leah, about mm-hmm. this idea that a dismissed attacker mm-hmm. or someone who is shuttered into silence mm-hmm. is the objective that Hubbard lays out for someone like Rich. Right. So it is, what is it that is his buttons? What is right. it that he is seeking to protect? What is it that is going to upset him right. to make him not want to continue? Just throw up his hands and right. walk away from this.
And you're right. And yes. Never, and so he'd go home that night. Yeah.
Do anything yeah. relating to Scientology ever again. And Rich, before we go on, I have to say to you, I am sincerely sorry for these things that happened to you. They are, it like hurts my heart talking about this with you in particular mm-hmm. and a lot of other people that I've talked to, but yeah. it's an abomination. And I want to say, you know, you were right. You were absolutely right. And the effort was to try and make it appear that you were in fact wrong, that you didn't know what you were doing. You were lying. You didn't. And to convince other people of that. And you were so on the ball. I mean, when I reread today, the title of your article, I went, hey, you summed the whole thing up without even having to write the article. That first two lines is the story of Scientology. So please accept my apology.
Of course I do, but you don't need to. I mean, I don't know if they realized who they were dealing with, because again, going back to my childhood and going back to who I am, you know, I'm not a snowflake. And if you're going to come after me like that, it's just going to, you know, rub off me like water. And it just shows who you are.
Right.
And how glad I am that I did the piece. Not you. I'm talking about.
No, I got that.
The larger. Yeah. The
church. You would have every right to say you, meaning you.
Yeah. I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah. You know?
Exactly. It's sort of like this California cult. I mean, what do you, come on. I'll show you how we do things downtown.
Right.
It just didn't, it was annoying. It was time consuming, but, right. I remember, yeah, there's one thing. I don't want to talk about one thing. They dug into my family. I maybe I'll write about it someday, but I remember the lawyers called me in and said, whoa, we just found out a church private eye did X relating to your family history. And they were like, are you okay? You know, they were worried. We're in the middle of this $1 million litigation. Right. Is that going to really throw me? And I just smiled and I said, wow, right. wow, that's low. Right. And I said, look, that's, you know, I'm glad I did the piece. Yes. All of this is just so much proof that I'm glad I did this piece and I'd do it again. Wow. So it didn't, you know, it didn't get to me. But
well, great. I mean, that's you're very resilient. I mean, thank you on behalf
thank
of
you.
Like you yeah. said, the many Scientologists, ex-Scientologists, the people who avoided getting into Scientology because of the pieces that you put out. But are you continue to be shocked? Because I know you did an interview for CNN because you saw the same type of fair gaming going on with Lawrence Wright, who wrote the book, and then Alex Gibney, who did the documentary with Lawrence Wright, going clear. You saw similar, you saw again, Scientology is continuing to fair game. And there were many people in between, including the IRS, which is how they got their tax exempt status, by fair gaming individual IRS criminal investigation agents. Is that what they're called, Mike? Agents?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it shocking to you, Richard, to see that it's still continuing on?
I'll tell you what's shocking to me. By the way, Mike, I'll just say you don't need to apologize because look what you're doing now.
Right.
I mean, my God, look at that's just you're helping so many people.
Yes.
I think
Mike,
I'm shocked.
Did you hear Thank that? You. Mike, yeah. did you hear that? I know it's because, you know, I see Mike and I know Mike. We're very close and, you know, these things hurt him. And, you know, I joke when I bust Mike's balls, but, you know, Mike is one of the rare people. There are people out there like Mike who are doing the work, but Mike continues to admit to what he's done. Mike continues to do the work. He does it day in, day out without being paid, everybody. And he does it because he is a good person. And he is trying to make right and what he's done. And he doesn't have to. Believe me, Mike could just
That's
go
right.
off and live his life. So I don't want anybody to think that Mike owes anybody shit. He doesn't
nope.
owe anybody shit.
He doesn't.
There are people
Absolutely
who have
right.
done worse than Mike, who have taken a payout from Scientology and are doing nothing. They're sitting on a beach somewhere. Or they're having their mortgage paid by Scientology by attacking us or attacking those who are telling the truth. And Mike is a hero in my eyes. And, you know, I don't want anybody, if you are not a friend of Mike Rinder's, you are no friend of mine. So anyway, Mike, I love
thank you.
And I'm Richard, thank you for saying that to Mike. He needs to hear that.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
From other people than me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Besides yeah. Mike, you know, I'll get you back. I mean, you know, I've got to.
You're a New Yorker.
No, I know. Yeah. I have to say, though, that when you were apologizing, I was like, my mind went to Sarah Silverman's line when she was doing a skit and she said, you know, a German woman came up crying and apologizing for the Holocaust. And she said, ah, it was nothing. I just thought that was so, you know, it was and look,
yes.
I didn't go through a Holocaust,
right,
you know,
right.
So
yeah, I know,
but anyway, thank
but
you
but you
for
went
that.
Through a yeah, lot yeah. And we sure appreciate we sure
it's nothing.
I mean, listen, you know, back then, you know, I would have been of the same ilk. I wasn't in the sewer, but I would have viewed you as an enemy, as a Hitler, as Scientology depicts anyone speaking out against Scientology, and as an enemy to mankind. And that is how Scientology currently views all of us.
Sure.
And anyone speaking out. So,
the thing that you asked me before, the thing that I'm shocked. What shocks me is that Ms. Cabbage is still in power.
Mm-hmm.
My God, what is it, 35 years or something?
I mean, well,
groups
he did a very effective job of eradicating any possible competitors to himself. And he has relied on the fact that he got tax exempt status as the crowning achievement, that he did something that L. Ron Hubbard couldn't do, Rich. He tamed the U.S. government. L. Ron Hubbard could not accomplish that. David Miscavige did. Mm-hmm. And that, to Scientologists, gaining that tax exempt status is the you know, he can do no wrong in their eyes for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has parlayed that. And the fact that he got rid of any potential, you know, rivals to his power into an unassailable position.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, listen, we continue to do the work. Richard, you know, we continue to have these conversations. We continue to have podcasts and television shows and documentaries and blogs, and is to continue to expose Scientology. And we're not going to stop until it is stopped. And, like, you know, they could be a religion all day, all night. They should not have tax exemption for these activities that they have done for 5 decades.
Right.
And so I wanted to talk about the new article that came out in Forbes, right? It was a Forbes article. And the headline is Scientology ruthlessly harassed reporters, including me, which is you, for decades. Biden VP contender Karen Bass's statements about the cult just don't add up. So this is a speech from Karen Bass in 2010. She claimed it was in her district. News reports have come out that that was not true. Was not in her district. And she has made prior statements sending support to Scientology. She has since sent supportive accolades to Scientology for their various events. Right, Mike?
Yes. Rich puts in his article in 2012.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you did. You
and
said that.
2013.
Right, exactly.
With proclamations for its yes. human rights education.
Yes. She spoke about Hubbard's exciting words. So, of course, I quoted Hubbard a lot in my piece to show some exciting words of Hubbard. You know, it's very bizarre. It's bizarre that she's one of Biden's top contenders to run with him as vice president. She doesn't seem to know how to do a Google search for 5 minutes any of those years.
Mm-hmm.
And she still hasn't retracted.
Correct. My point.
Well, she says they've been exposed and everyone's now aware of the allegations. Allegations. Okay, right. What do you think of the allegations, Congresswoman?
Right. Right.
What do you
right.
think of the church? Talk. Right. So right. What's going on here? And it's all very weird. You know, I called her. I contacted her office in Washington and in California before I went to press. And I figured at some point I would hear, you know, no comment or, you know, thank you, but the Twitter statement is all we'll say. Nothing.
Right.
It's been over 24, 30 hours. And I'm sitting here like, that doesn't happen.
Right. Right.
I mean,
it happens when it comes
back to you.
Right. Exactly.
Something is really off here. Let me ask you guys, do you guys think that, she's been getting a lot of contributions by Scientologists? Do you think I mean, what's with her staff? What's going on here? What's going on here? Do you have any idea?
We don't really have any idea. We just have informed guesses.
Okay.
Or, you know, information based on past experience. And there is a few things that could explain this, Rich. One, she may have someone in her immediate staff or who she is personally connected to or who she respects who is, in fact, a Scientologist. I don't believe that she is. I really don't.
No.
But it's possible that she has some sort of a relationship with someone somehow that she does not want to offend. Because Scientologists go crazy about anybody saying anything negative about Scientology.
Oh yes. And what was concerning, and by the way, people should know, we have come after other people who have supported Scientology. This has been covered extensively on Mike's blog, on the Scientology Money Project, on Tony Ortega. Like and that was my point, Richard, is that soft bullshit response that she tweeted out, which was basically, look, you know, everybody deserves to believe what they want to believe, you know.
And, well, that's true.
But when your beliefs are destroying families,
other people,
misappropriating funds that you with your tax exempt money, where you are abusing people physically, mentally, where there has been 1977, the FBI raided Scientology. Yeah, they were convicted of the largest infiltration of government agencies. We're not talking about just some kind of innocuous little Hollywood cult. But I believe, this is just my opinion, she knows exactly what Scientology is up to. And it goes along with Mike is saying there's somebody she doesn't want to piss off. There's some other reason, because the truth is she is not saying the truth. She didn't even come out and say, all right, I fucked up. I mean, she doesn't have to say that because she's got class.
Yeah, yeah. This is very serious. As I said in the Forbes article, this is serious stuff.
Yes.
It is especially serious right now.
And I don't know if the LA Times or LA Magazine, somebody should look into this, but it's the old Freedom, you know, the Freedom magazines used to list members going through various stages of Scientology.
Well, they don't do that now.
Oh, they don't.
Well, because of the internet, because now people can Google somebody's name in Scientology and see that they have these completions. Yeah, they used to put out the Scientology completions, right?
Okay.
So they don't do that as much.
Seeing if somebody there is on her staff is impossible. Okay.
Well, no, you could possibly find.
It's not impossible.
Yeah, no, it's not impossible.
It could be done.
Absolutely.
A good investigative journalist in Los Angeles could dig into this, and you made the point that someone should be.
Yes.
Have there been contributions? That could be another factor. Like, Scientology prides itself on convincing politicians that it has enormous political influence, that it has a voting bloc that is huge, that it has contributors who have a lot of money who can get behind a campaign. Now, this has been disproven as a fact in Clearwater recently,
right,
where Scientology has its headquarters, you know, spiritual headquarters in Clearwater, and has been dominating the city for the last 30, 40 years. And Mark Bunker got elected to the city council, and Mark Bunker is public enemy number one of Scientology, and they couldn't stop him getting elected. So but they had convinced politicians in Clearwater and in Florida that they have this huge voting bloc. And I once said to one of my friends, let's prove that that's bullshit. We'll just run someone for elected office who they hate, and they won't be able to stop it. And that turned out to be Mark Bunker. And that's true. Now, that doesn't mean that a Karen Bass or, you know, the mayor of Sacramento or any of the other people who have stepped up and made public statements endorsing or supporting Scientology don't believe that that's true. I think some of them still do believe it's true,
and that
because
they have huge
Scientology has persuaded them over and over and over that this is the case. And, you know, that has probably some play or role in her unwillingness to go. I mean, the easy thing for her to have done would have been just turn around and say, look, that was 10 years ago. I knew nothing. I do not support them in any way, shape, or form. That's all she had to say.
Yeah.
I don't support them. I've since learned I don't support them. Why didn't she say that?
Because she supports them.
It's unbelievable.
Yes, right.
And I got to say, going back to, you know, 30 hours later or 40 hours, where's my return call? Just, you know, major publication, major article, something, no comment. Thanks for your interest. Yeah, that's weird. And it makes me think, what kind of a vice president would she be? Mm-hmm. Would this be a pattern in terms of just not responding?
Right.
Yeah, or not looking.
Blundering. And not admitting the truth. Saying one thing, I didn't know anything about it. When there was so much on Scientology before 2010, And then to say that was the one time that I did, I was at a ribbon cutting, trying to make it like it wasn't a big deal. No.
Yeah. And, you know, look, if she's picked, you know, she's a heartbeat away from the presidency, 77-year-old Biden.
Right.
So she's got some explaining to do.
I agree.
Listen,
thank you. Richard, thank you for continuing to tell the story. I mean, that's, you know, somebody like you who's been through the ringer with Scientology as you have. Thank you. Could say, no, listen, there's other people covering the story. I want nothing to do with it. Somebody will cover it. But you continue to cover it and you continue to expose what needs to be exposed. And we thank you for all that you have done.
You guys are fabulous. I really enjoyed this too.
Thank you.
Oh, you did?
Thank you for having me.
I did. We were elated.
Why does it have to end? You don't
because
like
we don't want to. We love you. Like we don't want to take more of your time, Richard. So, what has been the response to the current article in Forbes?
I've gotten some emails from editors of major publications who complimented the piece a lot. I don't know if any of them are looking into those areas that I think need to be probed. I don't know. One of the things I did point out that I think was important in my Forbes article yesterday was I listed major exposés that were done on the church and who did them.
Yes.
Starting in the 70s. I'm sure I left out some great ones, but I remember them off the top of my head from the 70s on up to 2009. Because that seems to be Congresswoman Bass's cutoff point.
Yes.
Because she says, well, after I talked, you know, I gave those comments, you know, then exposés came out and allegations as if nothing happened before.
Right.
And sorry, that doesn't fly.
Right.
You're wrong. And here they are. And I just boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And let's not forget, Rich, the one thing that wasn't on your list that I went, yeah. And how about the fact that you'd mentioned earlier that in 1977, the FBI raided Scientology and 11 senior officials of Scientology pled guilty, including Mary Sue Hubbard, the wife of L. Ron Hubbard, to engaging in a massive conspiracy against the United States government and 100 other officers, the AMA, the Better Business Bureau, lawyers, etc., etc.
I mentioned that the infiltrations. Mm-hmm. Where was she?
Right.
This was in LA. A lot happens. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
I love you, slow New York. What are you going to do? All we could do is what we could do, and doing it.
You're from Queens, right?
Brooklyn.
Benson.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. All right.
Yes.
Sorry. Queens. Oh, yeah.
That's the king of Queens.
I apologize.
That was a TV show.
Listen, Richard, thank you again.
Wonderful.
Lovely. And thank you for all that you've done and all that you continue to do.
Thank you both.
We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Rich. Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. Until next week.